so good to be back. As I said, my name is Joshua Long, and I come from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Annapolis, currently the membership as well as the music coordinator there, the congregation. And I want to frame, before I start this sermon, I just want to frame it a little bit. And as I've heard this morning, in some ways, this community has made a commitment to justice, particularly anti-racism, racial justice, and I want to say that the sermon punches podcast in process. The punches are that this might be a little hard to hear. And that's why I call it punches, because sometimes doing this work is not easy. I love being a Unitarian Universalist, but at the same time, there's a calling for us to work against injustice. And that's not easy to do. And that also means that we ourselves have to examine ourselves and work out the own injustice that we have in our own life as well. So the reading this morning from the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus said, "Let him who seeks continue seeking until he finds. When he finds, he will become troubled. When he becomes troubled, he will be astonished, and he will rule over all." And that will come up back in the sermon, as we will see the process that becoming troubled. But I want to start with Christopher Columbus. You might be familiar with him. You might have heard this guy. And as many of us know, in recent years, he has become a highly debated character. From my point of view, he's the one who, I can't say discovered, more so sort of invaded this continent that we have here, which will become America. And while he wasn't an explorer and, you know, he wanted to travel the world, I remember from grade school, we would watch videos about Christopher Columbus and sing the rhymes and the songs. But Christopher Columbus brought something else to this continent, and unfortunately it was disease, it was colonization, it was America's original sin. And I want to give a little excerpt from this podcast that I listen to called Seen on Radio. Seen on Radio is given by the Center for Documentary Studies from Duke University, the host John Bewin, and I'll dive a little more later into it, but they did a particular season called Seeing White. And here's an excerpt from episode 6, and it's the novelist Alan Greganis is speaking about Columbus. "Columbus is a curious figure. I mean, the more you read from his journals, the clearer it becomes that he was a mercantile agent. He was literally the agent of Ferdinand and Isabella. He got 10% of everything that would be made in this nation, which is why he wanted gold, first and foremost. But instead of taking gold back on that first voyage, he couldn't really find enough. So he took people back. And he admitted that they had been extremely generous to him. The first day, the first sighting in Columbus's journals, he says, they approached us in the water carrying flowers, fruit, parrots, and certain dry leaves, meaning tobacco. And he handed them his sword to demonstrate his power. And they were fascinated by the colors of the metal. And they ran their hands along the blade edge and cut themselves. And Columbus's immediate thought on that first day was selling them into slavery. There seemed to have been no wonder in him, no gratitude. It was immediately cash and carry. And I think that that's a legacy that is borne out today. It's just the air we breathe. So I think the responsibility is shared, and the legacy is so much more nuanced and compromised than most people would prefer to think." Punches, podcasts, and process. As I said before with punches, I'm not advocating for violence. But growing up, I loved to watch action shows, anime, Japanese animation with cool fight scenes. One of my favorite shows to this day is Dragon Ball Z. Me and my siblings, my friends, we just went to the movies 2 weeks ago for the new Dragon Ball movie that came out. And what's actually funny about punches, what I think about is they'll have all these exaggerated scenes, and you know they're fake and whatnot, but sometimes when someone will punch somebody in the stomach, you'll see their like hand in their stomach, and it's just really ridiculous. But a punch to the gut, it can knock someone out, it can be a wake-up call. But either way, it's not pleasant. It's not a good feeling. So today I want to talk about the uncomfortable part of justice, the discomfort, the growing pains, the emotional punches we have to feel at some point as we do this kind of work. Those on the margins feel it more than others. I can attest to that. So moving on to the podcast part, I'm a podcast lover. I have several podcasts in which I have on rotation. I'm behind on quite a few. One specifically that I enjoyed in the past few years, though, is the one I mentioned, Seen on Radio, the Center for Documented Studies at Duke University. And season two was a study on racism through the lens of what it means to be white. Season three was a study on patriarchy and male supremacy called Men. Both seasons, John B. Wynn, the co-host who is checks both as white and male and has both those privileges, what he does is, on both seasons, he brings somebody, another scholar, to check him. So the Dr. Chinjerai Kumanyika sat in on season two during the racism podcast, and Dr. Celeste Headley for the podcast on patriarchy. And together, they inform, they challenge, they provide different angles to kind of tackle the notions of white supremacy and male supremacy, this water in which we swim in. Now, as a man myself, it is uncomfortable for me to reflect upon my own male privilege and the ways I myself have contributed to patriarchy. In episode 10 of the Men series, they followed a family in which the middle school son opens up about the conditioning of toxic masculinity. He says boys have to be tough, you have to pick on the weaker ones, and this might be a trigger warning, you must not be gay. If someone calls you gay, you have to deny it or you are seen as weak, less than a man. That story is so familiar to me, as I was given detention in fourth grade for calling another student gay. I had no idea at the time what that term even meant. But I knew that I didn't want to be that. And I make no excuses for my past ignorant views about people, but I tell you this story because we are only the sum of our parents, culture, society, and community that passed on to us. However, I want to make this clear. It is still our responsibility to change. It's our responsibility not to just change, but then to work for change in our society. So I am grateful for the change that took place in me. Going to art school in downtown Philadelphia was such a blessing for me and my faith development. And I began to see the worth and dignity of every human being when I found Unitarian Universalism 7 years ago. I was truly able to see everyone as human, not ignoring what makes us unique, but learn to cherish and value our differences. I still have work to do, but we can never love too much. We can never grow in spirit too much. But the growth is painful. It's hard. Mistakes are made, including my own. A few years ago at church, I introduced a trans person using their name assigned at birth instead of their actual name, the one they had chosen to identify and be fully themselves in. It was embarrassing, and yet by apologizing and being open about my mistakes, I was able to have a genuine connection with someone and continue to grow my own spirituality. White fragility, toxic masculinity, transphobia, those are hard terms to accept. And even if we feel our record is clean, we benefit from these identities. But if we believe we are to be Unitarian Universalists, a faith with a loud voice in the world, then we must learn to address these issues both in our personal lives as well as in our communities. Now, I believe there are two hindrances to the ability to confront these things, we wish we didn't have to name. It's fear and shame. Fear because, as the reading from the Gospel of Thomas says, if we begin to seek truth and justice, we will be troubled by just how deep the injustice in our country goes, and even within us. White supremacy, as some of you may be discovering as you work through these books, you're reading White Fragility next month, I heard. As you work through these things, you'll discover white supremacy isn't just extremists who are KKK members or neo-Nazis. White supremacy is the water in which we swim. It is the foundation of this country. The legacy left over from when Columbus invaded this nation and began the work of colonizing it. And please note that I intentionally did not use discover or settle, for they perpetuate the story of white exploration rather than the reality of white exploitation. We have to take the leap of faith in reframing how we see our history and ourselves. But to confront these realities also brings us to the other hindrance, shame. I am a person of color, a black man in America, so I do not experience white guilt as some set of white fragility. But as a cisgender man, as expressed earlier, there is guilt about how I have benefited from both male and heterosexual privilege in the ways I have acted in the past. I am not ashamed for being a straight man, though. I am who I am. Both shame and guilt are two different things. Guilt convicts us for both our behaviors and the ways we benefit from systems. Guilt is a necessary emotion we need in order to change. But shame is more destructive. When we start seeing ourselves as wrong, then we begin to oppress ourselves. That not only is unhealthy for your personhood, but it does nothing to help undo these systems of oppression. When we act out of shame, we may do more harm than good. We may become paralyzed, apathetic, cynical, or even despaired. That is why we need a community of faith to do this work. The growing pains are hard. We will fight, we will make mistakes, we will take two steps forward and three steps back, but we must remember the results of inaction. The idea that if we just don't talk about race and patriarchy, if we just treat everyone as equal, which is impossible as human beings, these only work to preserve systems of oppression and marginalization. A quote from the book White Fragility, Robin DiAngelo, provides more insight from a white woman's perspective of why talking about race is difficult. And she quotes, "Refusing to engage in an authentic exploration of racial realities erases and denies alternate racial experiences. If we block out other realities by not discussing them, we pretend that they don't exist, thereby assuming a shared racial experience. Not talking about race allows us to maintain our sense of ourselves as unique individuals, outside collective socialization and group experience. While it isn't comfortable for most white people to talk about racism, we must do so if we want to challenge rather than protect racism. When we back away from these difficult, uncomfortable conversations, we continue to support the systems. It is this kind of racism, the systemic quiet, that enables such acts of violence against people of color to be looked over. Earlier this week, I had a conversation with Reverend Sue about this sermon in particular, and we talked about the unfortunate murder of Anton Black, the young man who was killed by a police officer, and as we heard today, their family is grieving even another loss. But a society that does not confront its sins will continue to repeat them. That is why this work is so important. The cost of not doing may be guilt, shame, discomfort, or apathy for the privilege, but it's a matter of life and death for those in the margins. This is weighty stuff. It's heavy, as they used to say, but I have found that to join others in the fight for freedom and justice will in fact mean salvation for us all. None of us are free until all of us are free, Solomon Burke sings in the hit blues song. But as our UU ancestors discovered long ago, we find salvation through character, by living a life that is more and more like the divine. That is where trust comes in. The African American church always says to trust in the Lord, trust in the goodness of God. That has been a mantra for me in these past weeks reflecting on trust. And it's not a superficial trust, but it is put faith in the notion that justice will prevail. Let justice roll down like a river, as the book of Amos says. This justice does not come from sitting and waiting, but is an active justice in which we become the hands and the feet of the divine. We become the spark of light and hope in the world. We trust that even though there is discomfort, even though it is hard, and even though we make mistakes, it is through this hard work of confronting our bias and privilege, learning to listen to the voice of the oppressed, that we shift the atmosphere of this nation in the world. But even in this age of information, podcasts, news that comes to our phones in split seconds, sometimes prematurely before they get the whole story, we still have our doubts. We argue about alternative facts and fake news. But it's all part of a deeper fear, I believe. A fear that's actually afraid of looking at ourselves. Afraid of looking at the situation of ourselves and of others. That's why I think I like podcasts. A lot of them I listen to are people just sharing their experiences, their perspectives, rather than just facts and biased news events. We can't argue with what people are actually experiencing in their lives. Even when our inability to identify with them makes us uncomfortable, it's still their experience. So as I close, I just want you for a moment just to reflect on how the sermon made you feel. Your emotions, where is the discomfort? Where do you need to trust? What or who should you place your trust in? What may have triggered you and why? The punches, the discomfort, the fear, the embarrassment, they are all part of the process. But we trust and we act. We walk by faith, not by sight. It's how it works. We come to this faith community, Unitarian Universalism, because we value the journey of seeking. The search for truth and meaning, our fourth principle says, and as was said before by the testimony. However, we cannot stop there if we are to really, truly be a people of faith. We must trust that even though what we may find will trouble us, that if we continue to work at it, we will be astonished and eventually reach that spiritual place of wholeness and the beloved community that we hope for. We will be amazed at the blessings that working for justice will bring to ourselves, but more importantly, to the lives of others. May it be so. Amen.